back to school in Soweto in 1976 on this Youth Day with a friend of mine, a man I'm very proud to know, a man who was a colleague of mine at 702. If you were in Johannesburg in the 1990s, you'll remember Dan Moyane, did the morning show with John Robbie. He was a very prominent news anchor and news editor, became an SABC TV anchor, and is now an anchor on ENCA, one of the country's most prominent newsmen. And he was in Soweto on June 16, 1976, and I'm delighted to welcome him to the show. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hey, how are you, comrade and Kyle?
I'm all right, Dan. This must be an extraordinary day for you every year. Your mind must travel back every year this comes around.
You're quite right, Mike. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you and the K-Talk listeners this afternoon. Yeah, and every year, I just realized now, the other day, another memory pops up. Because, I mean, 45 years is a long time ago, and I was only 16 years old on June 16, 1976, at Morris Isaacson High School, you know, with a group of dozens and hundreds of other school children. I mean, we were just school children. I was in standard 9 that year, which I think today goes as grade 11. So every year, a new memory will come up, you know. Now it's 45 years ago, and a couple of things sort of popped up for me today. That even that day, I think was in 45 years ago, was a Wednesday like today. It was a bit colder in the morning in Johannesburg than it was this morning. It's been very cold the last few weeks. But what pops up for me is that we actually thought we'll just get to Orlando Stadium and our leaders, the likes of Tsitsi Mashinini, Khoso Siyathulo, and others, will then hand over, will read in public the memorandum that had been prepared in terms of a list of our demands. And then the next day we'll be back at school. Little did we know that that day will end with one of the biggest massacres this country has ever experienced.
And the life journey for you would end up in exile almost directly as a consequence of that day. Just paint the picture of Morris Isaacson School. It's achieved almost a legendary status now as the heart of those protests. So what kind of school was it? And what are your memories of the school before that day of protest?
Okay, it's one of the schools that was at the forefront of the protest action. The other schools would be the like of Naledi High School, where Innocent Gujana went. And the protest there started actually a couple of days before, several days before the 16th. You had schools like Orlando High School and Orlando West High and Musi High. And some of those schools today, they form part of the, I think there are eight of them, they call the eight heritage schools of Soweto. Schooling was schooling in those days was tough in the sense that we were under the Bantu education system. We had big dreams as young people. I mean, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a medical doctor. I wanted to be a pediatrician. That was my dream. Hence, when I was at Morris Isaacson High School, I was doing biology, science, physics, geography, the likes, and mathematics, because that's what we wanted to do. And we had registered in my group of classmates for what was known as a JMB, Joint Matriculation Board of Exam, which was supposedly the higher standard of examination that will include both black and white matriculants in the country at the time. Because if you recall, South Africa had four provinces, and each province had its own education department, and they were then broken according to race. You know, you had the white department, the Indian colored, and the black department, the Bantu education. So our resources were very minimal. I mean, we didn't have a laboratory that we could call a laboratory. I don't remember doing a single experiment, although I did chemistry and physics at school, in a laboratory, because there was no equipment. Our library was there, but it had old books. It was poor, but we devoured whatever we could. The school grounds themselves were not nothing much to speak of. We didn't have any sports fields. We had a felt surrounding Morris Isaacson High School and a crop of rocks here and there. And the quad, the central area, it was just dusty and nothing there to speak much of. And our classrooms were typically very basic, and no flooring to speak of, just cement floor, and you have a blackboard in front, and you have zinc roof above you with the wood that holds the roof. And we were very actively engaged in trying to improve ourselves. I mean, our teachers were saying, we need to succeed in spite of Bunt education. So you need to focus on your schooling and education. I was involved in school debating. Actually, in 1976, I was appointed, or I can't remember what would be the right way. It's not appointed, but I was invited to join TAT Machining's debating team. And I remember competing against other schools. And TAT Machining was a great orator. And we were all looking up to him. He was a role model, and he was one of the key leaders, and was the main leader of the Soweto student uprising at the time. So that's my recollection. So we're busy with schoolwork and facing those tough conditions, not many resources, but focus on trying to improve ourselves in spite of the system of Bunt education.
Was it a political environment, and were your teachers engaged in encouraging you to be activists?
We used to have, I can't speak about other what happened in other classes, but when I was in Standard 9, I remember very well, we used to have discussions with some of our teachers. A couple of them had been detained before. The principal of Morris Isaacson High School, Mr. Matabate, was a very respected community leader as well, and he had very clear political views, and they were among those who were engaging with the Department of Bunt Education over 2-3 years not to impose Afrikaans as a medium of instruction. So they were also leaders in their own right, and I remember particularly our science teacher, Fanyana Mazibuko. He became a poet, and he was detained and tortured, and he was our physics teacher. But when we had discussions, we would talk about the situation in the country, and I remember my geography teacher, Mr. Ngakane, who later on ended in exile in the ANC, and I think recently was part of the Department of International Relations. He had been ambassador to Algeria or someplace like that. But they were there also young with us and engaging with us. And we used to have these important discussions. And sometimes you get in English class, and then half of it is about English and the half of it is about politics.
So when June 16 was approaching, you were aware this was a day there had been something organized by Tsetse Mashinini and others, what the word had gone around to do what? To demonstrate? What was your feeling about what was going to happen on June 16?
Yeah, just a quick context, if we have time, Mike. Remember, the whole issue, the whole controversy of the imposition of Afrikaans as a medium of instruction happened years earlier. It was like a flick of the switch, so to speak, one morning. I went to school in 1973 to my Form 1 at Mulapo Secondary School, walked in one day in class, and suddenly the textbooks were being handed out. I was doing mathematics day before. The next day, I'm doing Wiskunde in Afrikaans. I was doing biology, then I'm doing biologie. I was doing history, then suddenly I'm giving a book in Geschiedenis in Africa. So that was just sudden like that. But for some time, there have been engagements and attempts to convince the authorities not to go ahead and impose that medium of instruction, Afrikaans. But it happened like that. So from 73, many of us become aware, become politicized, especially me. That's when I became politically aware, really, from 1973. I was about 14 years old. Then we have the student Christian movement, SCM, coming to our schools to come and talk to us and preach. But in that those sessions, the sermon becomes a political meeting. Then you have the South African student movement, SASM. There's mobilization happening in senior secondary school. So right from 1973 all the way, every year there is an activity, you become aware. Now, in 1976, a few months before and a few weeks before, there'd been protests like at Naledi High with the likes of Inosu Ngutshane. And the first police car to be attacked and burnt in Soweto by students was at Naledi High School a couple of weeks before. So we're very much aware. So the word of mouth was a way of communicating, unlike today when you can WhatsApp or email, or we didn't have any digital technology. So there were meetings And I remember the day before, we were all gathered by TAT in our school at Morris to say, tomorrow is the day, go home, but don't tell your parents anything. We can make placards like, away with Afrikaans, away with Bantu education, down with Bantu education. So it was that theme. And we all went home and in the dead of night behind the toilet in my home at White City. I also made a placard, like many of us were making placards. So we were aware that it's coming and that we didn't have to involve our teachers, we didn't have to involve our parents, we didn't have to tell anybody. So many people were surprised by the size of the protest, including the leaders, because when they were organizing, they thought, yeah, there'll be dozens of kids. But when we started marching, it became clear to them that the adherence to the call to march, that the word had spread far and wide, including some primary schools decided to join the high school students.
And then you marched, and what happened?
We arrived at usual. It's a South African practice at school. You have an assembly, and then normally the principal will open a scripture and read from the Bible in a Christian-aligned school, and then there'll be a prayer, and then maybe there'll be one hymn, and then he announces, and you go to class. That day, after Principal Matabate stood up and said, okay, welcome, good morning, today, whatever, we all had planned and synchronized nicely. We started singing Nkosi Sikelela Afrika. And then he said, hey, he tried to quieten us down. We kept on singing. And then we finished. And then TAT went on top where the principal was standing. And then he said, no, we're taking over. Yeah, sorry, Mr. Matabate. I just want to talk to my colleague there. What's going to happen next? We're taking over. We're going to be marching and stuff. And Mr. Matabate, I remember, I'm paraphrasing now, telling us to be disciplined and they support us, and they've been trying as well to get the department to drop Afrikaans as the medium of instruction, and we must behave, and da, da, da. So then we left, and as we left the gate, we started singing. We're singing freedom songs, and one of the ones that I remember that we were singing was that we are young, we are not afraid of dying, we're not afraid of being shot by the Boers. You know, that's how we were singing the song. And the mood was jovial. It was we were happy and we were running down. If you look at some of the early pictures of 1976, you'll see smiles on the faces of many of us who were there. We marched and marched until we got to Orlando West, and we get stopped by the police. Today, it's known as the Hector Peterson Memorial. Right there in that intersection, the police blocked us, and TAT addressed us and other leaders to say, we want to go to Orlando. The police say this march is illegal. We don't have a permit, so they are stopping us. We can't go, but we'll talk to them and see. So then we're standing around, we're waiting, we're singing, and the crowd is building up from behind us. We are coming from the western side of Soweto. We are now on the eastern side of Soweto, making our way towards Orlando East. Mike, you know Orlando Stadium very well. You've been there many times watching football games. So we are going towards that stadium, and then we get stopped. And suddenly, I don't know when and how suddenly this commotion, I think I must have been about 600 meters away from where the shooting happened, and we just see these kids from another part of the township, Orlando West, running down the street towards where we were. That's when pandemonium broke. So people say, they've shot the child, and stuff like that. And we were crouching, and we were hiding behind the car that we parked there, including one that belonged to the photographer himself, Sam Nzima, the one who took Hector Peterson's lifeless body to hospital.
And then what happened? Did you disperse? Did you go home? Could you hear the gunfire? What happened?
After that initial gunfire and the dogs being set and people running around, and we said we must, the group of us who were there, we were coming from Morris and the western side, we said we need to go back because it's not happening. I don't know exactly when and how, but as I said, all hell broke loose. And then we started stoning government vehicles because they were easily identifiable, and some people started attacking government buildings. By the time I got home, within that hour, Soweto was on fire. Everywhere you looked around, and you know Soweto, Mike, you don't have high-rise buildings. I mean, those days there was hardly not even a shopping center. Yeah, there's a lot, it's just low housing and around. And you looked everywhere, you just saw smoke. And then suddenly there were helicopters above, flying around Soweto, and firing tear gas from the air as well down at us as groups of people were now gathering and targeting government-owned owned buildings and vehicles.
And the next day, I presume you didn't go back to Maurice Isaacson. What happened?
We did. I did. We had to meet because we just said we're going to do this and then hand over and sing and come back next day. It's back to school. So we had to congregate. That was the only place where we could congregate and get a message to say, what's next? What's happening? What happened to you? So we managed to go to around schools, but the police by then in the hippos, they were going around various schools, including us. We had been identified as one of those, let's call it the schools that was at the center, at the forefront of the protest and where TAT was from. So they started going around as well. So we went to meet, but the school gates were closed, so there was nobody. And then you group around and you come together and to get away at what is going on. So the protest continued sporadically. Here and there you'd hear that there's a group of school trainers gathered that side, or you hear that there's a shooting that side. I mean, I've never had so much gunfire in my life until that day. And that's when we smelled tear gas, some of us, for the first time, obviously. It was our first ever demonstration, and we learned how to handle tear gas and started learning how to make petrol bombs to fight back besides using stones. So the protest continued, the shooting continued, and arrests were happening. And then you'll find out a few days later to say, do you know so-and-so has been detained? So-and-so has disappeared, and so-and-so has been arrested. That's really how it played itself out for those few days. And we would meet at school, and then we said, no, we must not stay around because sometimes they will come, and the police. I mean, I remember a couple of times we'd arrive at Maurice. As soon as we are in the group of us, the police will be coming after us. We have to run away, jump the fence, and disappear into thin air, so to speak.
And for you, Dan, that was obviously an intensely politicizing moment. I mean, from that moment, you are an activist, effectively.
Yes, I mean, many of us, I guess you say in life you always have a choice, but the only choice what was sensible and reasonable to make at the time was to be part of the political activism of the time. And because our demand, we believed, was very simple, was very clear, and because the notion that you would enslave a people through language was top of mind for us after what H.F. Fairwood had said decades earlier when they instituted the system of Bantu education. So we saw it's going to limit our career chances because you learn everything in Afrikaans, so you'll be literally domesticated and become subservient to the white minority rulers of the country. And we rejected that and we resisted that. So that was the beginning and the continuation of that awareness. And Mike, I mean, I lost many friends. We were shot and killed. People disappeared. Some people got disabled and some people ran away. And then that's when we become aware in that time that people can skip the country. And there were local community leaders on the ground, like Ntate Zeth Mutupeng, Mayor Ellen Kuzwayo, Dr. Thato Motlana, those who were on the ground as well, organizing. They even formed what they called the Committee of Ten as things were spiraling out of control and we were no longer in class. I mean, I don't know how many days we spent in the streets protesting and marching and for the rest of 1976. There was hardly any schooling that happened.
Dan, I thank you very, very much for that remarkable account of an extraordinary time in our history and an extraordinary time in your life. I really do appreciate your time on this Youth Day holiday. I know it's a day that means an enormous amount to you. Thanks very much, my friend.
Just to say, I mean, thank you very much for looking back at that historic watershed. But I think if you look back and you don't say what we do going forward, It could be a problem because, yeah, it's good to recognize and acknowledge the history, and it's important to have a good memories about it because African author Ngugi wa Thiong'o, who's quoted by President Ramaphosa in his newsletter a few days ago, once said that memory feeds our consciousness, and our conscience, we need consciousness to be able to address challenges and stuff. Our young people today are facing a different set of problems than we did. We had a focus on that education issue, which became then a bigger moment in terms of the anti-apartheid struggle. we can draw lessons from that. People will focus, work hard, and we have to make sure that we remain disciplined. Today's youth are facing a myriad of problems that one could never have imagined in 1976. I still feel that our generation, and of course the younger ones and others, can work together to make sure that the children of my children, children of your children, and Helen's children, in future will have a much brighter, safer, and prosperous future together. Because currently, the challenges we're facing in the country are beginning to sharpen certain divisions, bringing up certain wounds, and the woundedness of our society cannot be allowed to fester any longer. We need to find each other and heal this land for the sake of the future of your children, children of my children.
Dan, thank you so much indeed.